Backseat Producers, episode 176, Brotherhood of the Wolf.
Well, you got a three-way going here. Ow! 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 Well, you got a three-way going here.
Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Daryl.
And we are the Backseat Producers.
The Brotherhood of the Backseat Producers.
Yes. The wolves got the rest of them.
Yes, they were thrown to the wolves.
Yeah, we have begun our rotation, and probably for the next 7 or 8 episodes, we're going to be kind of in a rotation where there will be at least 2 of us recording. Maybe yes. 3, maybe
due
4.
Yeah, school, work, everything else has kind of decimated our numbers a little bit and kind of forced us slight time changes.
Yeah, there's just some busy times right now. Yes. But the one thing that is awesome is we're recording this episode on March 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
This episode will be released on March 30th.
Okay.
My birthday.
Woohoo!
By the way. So
happy birthday, Tony.
Yep. So this we are that caught up. Whoa.
Yes.
We are that almost caught up with our releases. In November we were 26-27 episodes behind.
Yeah, we were really a dragon there.
And now we've done 2 a week, plus we took some time off here and there, like through the holidays and stuff. But we did not stop releasing 2 a week, and now we are caught up.
Woohoo!
So exciting time!
Oh yes, nice to be nice. Not unfortunately, without our backlog in place, we're really going to have to hump from now on.
Well, we've got we're going to release 2 episodes next week, Monday and Wednesday, and then the episode we record next week will be released the following Monday, and then we're going to go on a Monday only release schedule.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be caught up. I've got one special episode that Adam and I recorded a long time ago that will release the first time we have to completely skip a week. After that, we're gonna have to record.
Yes, yeah, so we have to hump every week.
So, but we'll get it, and we can get creative too with bringing in people on Skype and things like that. We could have some fun with it. But this week we are going to talk about Brotherhood of the Wolf.
2001 French film that came out to very very high acclaim at the time.
Yeah, and this one has been requested by our fan Tallulah for a long time. Every time we say we don't know what we're talking about next week, she hounds us to do this one.
Hounds, yes.
Yes.
You can hear a lot of wolf and dog references.
So this one's for you, Becca. We don't have anything scheduled for next week.
Stay tuned.
Though today,
well, you had that big list.
Yeah, we have a big list together. But one of the things that did happen today was Elizabeth Taylor passed away.
Mm-hmm.
We have done one that I can think of Elizabeth Taylor movie in the past, and that was way back in.
Yeah, I don't even remember.
It was in 2008. It was when T and Pip were doing their Double Trouble on 8808. And before T and Pip joined forces on that promotion, T was going to do it to promote one of his Billabong batting releases, and it was going to be called Crazy Eights because it was 8808. So we found 8 movies with the number 8 in the title, that we
and of course we did, you picked Butterfield 8.
We did Butterfield 8. Mm-hmm. That was one of the 8 movies we did, and that was one of
and that's the one that
it's considered that, one of her best performances. It was one of the 2 that she was nominated for.
Yeah, but the thing is, she said she did not consider that her best performance. She considered Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf was her personal best, even though she doesn't like to watch her own movies.
Yeah,
for various this is not an unusual thing for most actors, because they tend to get hypersensitive about how the screen presents them.
Sure,
they can't really do a self-criticism, because they sit there and deconstruct everything as they're watching it.
It's, you know what? It's one of the things that keeps people from podcasting a mm-hmm. lot of times, because if you're going to edit the podcast, you mm-hmm. have to be able to listen to yourself speak. Mm-hmm. It gets tough sometimes.
I really sound that bad?
Yeah. Well, especially in the beginning. I mean, we've been doing this almost 5 years now, so I've kind of gotten used to the sound of my own voice.
What? I don't sound like Cary Grant?
Yeah, no. It's hard to believe. Though, apparently one person once told me I sound like Ben Affleck.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what? I listened to... I got that comment... And I went to YouTube and look for clips of Ben Affleck and just listen to them and then listen to an episode. It's like, I guess I kind of do. I don't really hear it, but hey, I'm going to take it.
Yeah, well, that's something I've gotten kind of desensitized in my own voice when I'm testing voicemails on the phone. A phone microphone is about the worst sound pickup, and it tends to cut off either all your highs or your low, and I sound like a mouse sometimes. And I can't stand it. Even though I read these long test sentences through them, and I cringe every time I have to play them back.
Yeah, yeah. So, Elizabeth Taylor, we're likely going to do something...
Tribute to her, yes.
Tribute to Elizabeth Taylor. Maybe next week, maybe in a couple of weeks. We've been bandying around a few films. I don't know if you saw the email chain.
I haven't read all the chain through.
We've been looking at some movies like Giant, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Right.
A few of those movies have been kind of tossed around.
Also, might want to consider Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, too.
That's
it's a very brutal movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. I haven't seen Giant, so... Mm-hmm.
Well, Giant, kind of interesting, because that one movie there launched the careers of a whole bunch of actors who went on to bigger and better things.
Yeah. Yeah, and now I have seen... Tallulah's mentioned she was in National Velvet.
Well, that was her first movie.
Yeah, yeah. I have seen Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, and I really enjoyed her performance in that. I thought that was pretty great. But we'll figure something out. Likely it's going to be that. If not, we'll figure something out. Anyway.
Well, on to our own movie tonight.
Yes. So tonight we're talking about Brotherhood of the Wolf. As we said, it is a foreign film, French.
Right. French, released in 2001, and gained quite a bit of notoriety. It's kind of a really strange movie. It's a wild mixture of action, horror, martial arts.
Mysticism,
political
religion,
intrigue.
Politics.
It's all over the place, but it surprisingly does a really good job of holding it together.
So... I have only... The first time I saw this movie has been this past week.
Mm-hmm. And I've seen it twice. Once when it first came out in its theatrical release with its original French soundtrack, and this time again with the English dub.
So, interestingly enough, I got a copy of Brotherhood of the Wolf from my local library. When I was... I got another copy of it from someone, and I got my copy of mm-hmm. it from the library onto you. The copy that I got of this movie, the second copy I got, was actually the extended version.
Was that the director's cut version or just the extended? They mentioned in some of the show notes here that there is a director's cut of it, which contains the documentary of how they made the movie and also the historical background of it.
I don't believe it has all
okay.
that.
Okay, then that must be an extended theatrical release.
I think it's
release.
Just an extended release.
With the additional scenes.
I started watching the first edition, the I guess it was a theatrical release. And I wasn't real impressed with the dub, especially what I had seen. The dialogue was, in some cases, really wordy, which can happen. I mean, I know enough about the dubbing process to know that sometimes, because of the way language works, some languages have a lot more syllables in their words in some cases than we do. I know that that's the case of a lot of Japanese dubbing, that they have, sometimes they have really crazy names for their characters in English because they're trying to fill in extra
Well, yeah, they're trying to match the mouth flaps with the timing of the word. Because it's also the way that they do their dubbing process.
Mm-hmm. I'll never forget, I watched a documentary on the original Speed Racer, the old cartoon, and one of the things that always struck me as funny was that the inspector character, his name was Inspector Detector, and they said, we gave him that name because the Japanese language has so many more syllables for words. By giving him the name Inspector Detector, we added that many more syllables
and filled the time
every
slot.
Every sentence we had that character in just to fill in space.
Right. Also, again, differences between the way the dubbing process is done in Japan for animation, they do the film first, and then the voice actors put in the voices. The Americans, we record the voices first, and then the animation process is done to them. So right. The mouth, the timing matches the actors.
Yeah.
So, again, when you're going from a foreign language film to a dub in English, yes, it's fun to try to get the timing of the voices to match the mouth movements of the actors.
And it didn't seem like they even tried to do that.
Well, that's what generally drives me crazy about a dub of a foreign film. Sometimes I just prefer to just read it subtitled.
Yeah.
Because that way I get the, as one of the commenters here mentioned, you get the full emotion of the actor.
Right.
As he originally meant to be.
Yes. Yes. What's interesting is in the other version of it that I saw, I don't know if they really changed the dub or not, but I swear within the first 20 minutes, which is all I saw of of each cut, I saw the first 20 minutes, then I watched the whole cut of the director's cut or extended cut or whatever that was. And even there, it seemed like the way it was cut and the way the dialogue was cut, it was a lot smoother. It was of a higher production value.
Mm-hmm.
And I was more impressed with that first 30 minutes the second time I watched it, even being more critical of it. Because the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, this is kind of crappy. I don't know if I'm in for a 2.5 hour long movie like this. But the extended cut was solid. I mean, it was a much better production value. The film had a better... The transfer was better. It just looked sharper. It looked more crisp. It looked cleaner. And I think it was just a matter of a better transfer, yeah.
Well, yeah, they may have hired some better people, and by that time they'd put a little more effort into hiring some better voice actors.
That could have been
And again, a better film editor and dubbing editor.
Right, right. So this is... Let's go ahead and start off high level thoughts.
I enjoyed the movie. I mean, even though it had a rather slow beginning to it, once the action started moving and the story started deepening up, I couldn't pull away from it very easily. I fell into it very nicely.
Yeah, I agree. I liked the initial pacing of it that was a little slower, kind of. To draw you into the story, and then once it really got moving, it didn't let up a whole lot. I liked how they were willing to get rid of characters.
But yeah, there is
character death that is permanent, and it's
right,
meaningful.
Especially to the most beloved characters that you really get into it, and you make the emotional investment into them, and then three quarters of the way through, bang, they're gone.
Yeah, and. I thought that was really well done. I enjoy that because it gives some weight to the story. It means that you know, anything's possible. You know, if you're going to kill, if you're going to kill a beloved character,
well, they like say as we get into the story, they almost make you think the inevitable, the unmentionable happens.
Yeah, yeah. At which point, I was thinking, wow, this is really cool because you have completely changed the scope of the film, and I really dug that. I thought it was great. Of course, they kind of backed off a little bit from it, but yeah, I don't mind at all.
Well, another thing was the visuals in this movie. From the time period which this is done, they love to jump into a lot of fast cut between slow-mo and fast action, and then back to the slow-mo again during some of the action sequences, which is initially, for me, was kind of distracting, but after a while, they kind of grew on you.
Yeah.
It's because you can see kind of what's going on in the choreography that's taking place. Otherwise, it would be so fast. Because there's one whole scene in there where the hero of the film just tears through a group of antagonists.
Yes.
With no slow-mo.
No.
And he's just like a freight train
through them. And I thought it was an interesting choice. And we'll get to that because mm-hmm. that kind of gets into a spoilery kind of area of the film. One thing that to start off that was interesting that I didn't realize until I was done watching the movie and started looking up some information on the film in general was to find out that this was a historically accurate to a lot of respects, not completely. It is a historical fiction, but there was a beast that, mm-hmm. that killed people. That this is a historically accurate event. That there was something
that gave rise to the legend of the Wolfman.
Right, there was something killing people in the wild,
mm-hmm.
And that every character, I think, with all the major characters, with the exception of Manny, who was the Native American,
yes, Iroquois Indian, who was
the martial artist Iroquois, which okay.
It was You're already things. Into the supernatural, so yeah. This is not too far of a stretch.
At that point, it was one of those things that was like, you know what, if you're going to represent that he has a completely different fighting style, and you're going to represent it as martial arts, that's a stylistic choice I'm okay with. It's fine. You're making a stylistic choice, that's cool. You know. Plus, the movie doesn't wear... Like, there's some movies that wear the badge of authenticity mm-hmm. on their chest. They're like, we are trying to be as completely accurate...
Historically accurate as we can.
As we can. We're trying to make this as authentic as we can. You know, looking back at movies we've done recently, like Saving Private Ryan and mm-hmm. Schindler's List, they try to be as historically accurate as they can be, you know, mm-hmm. with the exception of their little microcosm of characters. This movie... It felt like they were going for more like a stylized view version of events.
About the closest I think I can come to in this type of style is Michael Mann.
I'm not familiar.
Michael Mann, he was mostly noted for being the director of Miami Vice, but he also did a few others. He did a horror movie called The Keep, which is one I think we need to take a look at.
The Keep is...
Band of the Hand and several other action movies from the 80s, which is... he had the same visual aesthetic also.
Native American Kung Fu. Thank you, Chibi. the acting in the film, it's hard for me to judge because I watched the English dub.
Mm-hmm. Also not having a really good handle on these, the foreign actors, it's kind of hard to compare them against anybody else.
Right.
So you just have to kind of take it in as it's presented.
And the lead actor, to be honest, I don't remember the lead actor's name, but he was convincing in the role. I believed him as a thoughtful man. I believed him as the action hero he was mm-hmm. at times,
mm-hmm.
as the lover and the fighter, because mm-hmm. he played all those roles and he played them very convincingly.
And the scientist too.
He was a nice cross between like a James Bond and like a Sherlock Holmes
and an Indiana Jones all rolled into one.
Yeah, all mashed together. It was really good. I thought he did a great job.
Well, they do give some background for where he picked up all those mad skills of his.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And his name, this actor's name is Samuel Lee Liebehan.
Okay.
So I guess we could launch into the story itself.
The story is pretty straightforward. There's a little bit of setup. One thing that I found really interesting, and I don't know if anybody else picked up on it. So the first thing we see is a woman being chased by something.
A band of, yeah. Well, yes, the first initial
scene.
That
initial scene. She's being chased by something or someone.
Right, and we're seeing it from the beast's point of view.
Right, so we never actually see the beast. It approaches her, it attacks, it flings her around, and eventually
kills her,
consumes her, whatever. Mm-hmm. Was it just me, or did that opening, especially when she's against the rock being dashed around, that reminded me of Jaws. Mm-hmm. It reminded me
a lot of now that you think of it, how the opening scene of Jaws,
it reminded me a lot of
where the swimmer is
being flung
back and forth.
Yeah. So it was, in that way, it was like, oh, this is nice, because one of two things is going on here. They're using that iconic being chased, the woman in danger, and it just happens to mirror Jaws, or they're going for a visual,
a little homage there,
an homage that it's a pretty great homage if that's what they're going for, because that's. That was what I saw. I saw the opening of Jaws, and it was like, all right, you've got a beast, and...
You don't see
where it. Are we going to go for more parallelism in Jaws? And in some ways, there's a little bit of it, but not a lot. There's really not a whole lot. I mean, there's interesting things with the politics. You've got this scientist coming in who's the thoughtful one who's trying to give a measured response to what
right.
is
he's,
going
he's
on.
Right, he's been sent in to investigate the series of killings.
Right, and he's not going to be one that's going to easily be led down the superstitious, it's a werewolf, it's a beast, it's a wolf man.
It's the devil incarnate or something like that.
Right, because that's what a lot of the people in the area were thinking.
Well, yeah, they're thinking it's just a wolf, or it's a bear, or, and of course, the clergy jumps in and says, no, it's a manifestation of God's punishment for whatever.
Right. Ad,
fill in blank. The way they're approaching at it, the local police are saying, well, no, it's just a damn wolf. We're going to hunt it down and kill it. And the aristocracy is saying, we don't care what this thing is, we just want it stopped.
Yep.
Because it's starting to hurt our reputation. And, you know, the local people, they don't know what to believe. They just know this thing's killing things left and right.
Yeah, and it's got to stop. They're fearful. It's killed in excess of 100 people over a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And so this guy's coming in to...
Well, he's been sent in by the king to find out what this thing is.
To find out what's going on.
And we might want to put the historical setting on. This is happening in about the time frame of, in the movie it says, is 1765. So it's essentially after the French-Indian Wars, which kind of comes in later, but it's before the French Revolution. And the initial story starting out from the viewpoint of one of the characters there. He's essentially doing this as a writing his memoirs during the French Revolution.
Yeah.
Or right at the peak of it. Or the peak of the terror, as it's called. So our hero comes in, Georges de Franciac comes in, and he's set to investigate these series of killings that's happening in this part of France. And he's meeting with all sorts of some resistance and skepticism from everybody.
Interesting scene when he and his
companion,
his
yes.
companion, I guess is the best.
His name is Manny, who is an Iroquois Indian
and martial artist.
Well, yes, hell of a fighter.
He's a badass.
Yes.
they approach a woman being attacked,
mm-hmm.
and
by a gang of toughs, and he sort of teaches them differently.
Yeah, yeah, kind of dispatches them. Then we move quickly on to a nice little bit of exposition where we meet the local leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And the one young man, the Marquis, who is
the point.
He's very interested in the greater goings on of the world. He's kind of trapped in a small town, and he's got bigger aspirations.
Right.
I mean, to break it down at a very high level, that's the feel I get from that.
Well,
character.
The thing is, well, yeah, he's kind of a bit of a hero worship on De Franciac. Because De Franciac's been there.
Right.
He's been to the New World. He's been back. He travels all over the place. He meets interesting people and animals. And he's got the ear of the king. So, like, he's somebody.
Right.
And he kind of wants a piece of that action. So he kind of quickly befriends De Franciac in his hunt for the beast.
Yeah. So there we get a good flavor over the course of a couple of scenes of the local politics,
mm-hmm.
that there are, you know, that there's a real strong drive to get rid of the beast or to suppress
knowledge of it.
Suppress knowledge of it, get rid of it, or just remove the panic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we can
show that we're doing something,
yeah, gloss it over, make a show of doing something, mm-hmm. then it'll soothe the masses, and
right.
And that leads into,
well, you got a three ways going here. You've got the local militia who is trying to hunt this thing down,
right?
You've got De Franciac who's in there trying to investigate what it actually is. And then you got the local aristocracy who just wishes the whole thing would all go away, one way or the other.
Right. And then, well, and then there's that fourth faction, which is, initially it just seems like this really odd group of detractors.
Mm-hmm.
We first meet them the morning of the hunt. There's a big hunt that's going to take place.
Right. They've organized all the hunters in the whole province.
Right.
And they're going to drive this thing, or they're going to kill everything regardless. They're going to find it.
And it's pretty clear that that the hero knows that this is all a big show.
Mm-hmm.
This is... Look.
There's no way in the world.
We're not going to catch this thing. We're not going to find it. We're not even going to see it today.
Mm-hmm.
But if we show the populace that we're doing
something,
everybody's going to be a little more relaxed. It'll give us more time to actually find it.
Mm-hmm.
The morning of the hunt, Manny gets involved in a confrontation with some of these.
Yeah,
this other faction.
Yes, they're referred to in the movie as the gypsies.
Yeah,
but they're just kind of like local toughs who've been kind of brought in to act as hunters.
Right.
And they later cause more problems.
Right. And we recognize them and their fighting style, because when they really start fighting, these handheld claws, very similar to like Wolverine's claws, get used all over the place.
They stop becoming just a friendly spar and turn deadly serious.
Yes. So Manny gets into a fight with a number of them and, for lack of a better term, kicks their ass.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just plows through them. And interestingly enough, he takes them out, but he doesn't kill.
No, he just knocks them around.
He just beats them around. He puts them in their place.
Mm-hmm.
It's a show of force, and he
right.
wins.
Right. But they just won't accept defeat.
No.
They just keep escalating the fight up until finally it's stopped. And we might add, at this point, we meet the love interest of the film, which is one of the daughters of one of the local aristocracy that De Franciac starts courting.
Yes.
And we also meet her rather strange brother, too, who we find out who's been to Africa and was severely injured. Apparently he's lost an arm.
He only has one arm.
Mm-hmm. And he has these specialized guns made up that that can be fired single-handed. So he's got this big-ass rifle that's got a shoulder brace on it that he can brace up on his trunk and cut loose on. In fact, that's how he ends the fight, by shooting one of the gypsies and stunning him with his own special bullets.
Yes, his silver bullets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his name is Francois, Jean Francois. And the love interest is Marianne.
He's even questioned when it's revealed that he uses silver bullets.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe in werewolves? Is this your belief in werewolves?
Right.
And he says, no, I'm a hunter.
Yeah.
I'm a hunter. It's such a part of me that it is my signature. I sign my kills, basically.
Right. So you know they're mine.
Which... Hey, spoiler!
Well,
this is going to come back.
Well, yeah, this is the MacGuffin.
They make a big point of the silver bullet. So, mm-hmm. if you're only half paying attention, you realize this is going to come back.
This is the MacGuffin. Yes,
something about these silver bullets will play into this. So they go on a hunt. A body is found.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes, it turns out to be the girl who was killed in the first part of the movie.
Right, right.
They're using her body as bait.
And what's his name again? The hero. What's his name?
De Francais.
Okay. He does basically a makeshift autopsy on her,
mm-hmm.
And finds metal fragments in her body,
mm-hmm.
which is curious because if this is a natural occurring beast,
it ain't gonna have metal teeth.
Why would it have metal? Yeah, mm-hmm. what part of it's metal, and how is this metal being used? So he suspects that this is not entirely a natural occurring.
Well, he knows it initially because he said the bite wounds are 5 times larger than any wolf ever known. So we know it's not a local creature.
Yeah,
something outside.
He measures the bite radius, and he even says that this thing has to be at least 500 pounds. Mm-hmm. This is huge.
Right. This is no mere bear, wolf, or any local animal that he knows of in France.
Right. And we've also already seen those claw weapons that the gypsy use.
Mm-hmm.
So... it's quite possible that their metal claws,
mm-hmm.
could be used in some of these attacks. That's one thought, and it's kind of it's not heavily implied, but it's enough that the pieces are there, so that you can kind of see that's one possible angle this could be taking. So the gypsies are suspect. Plus they're not necessarily acting innocent.
No. Seeming they always want to start fights with everybody all the time and are kind of sneaking around.
Right. The thing is, about the middle portion of the movie, there's a lot that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
a lot of it that happens is more or less is setting up more of the whole story and digging a little more deeper into what's kind of the politics of what's happening here.
Right, yeah. So we have a number of scenes that set up one of a couple of different things. One is the politics, the local politics versus the national politics, because national politics do come into this. The church plays a role in all this. Then we have a lot of character moments. Tallulah's bringing up the brothel.
Yes.
There's some scenes that happen within the brothel that, mm-hmm. that give you an idea of... The interplay between Manny and the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he helps Manny get a woman.
Well, he helps calm their fears over him.
Yeah.
as his nice quaint little saying is, when all the candles go out, all women look alike.
Yes. Yes. Well, and that played into. The prejudice of some of the local,
mm-hmm.
the local politicians. The one guy was flat out saying, "You know, are can you even mate with our women? You know.
And then he reveals, well, he's my brother, so yeah.
Yeah.
So we got a little racial prejudice here going on, but it also tends to remind them that, you know, he came out of the French Indian Wars out of New France.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he's kind of a little bit depressed about that whole episode right there, and we find out later why.
Yeah, they give an interesting anecdote about how the French general got rid of the Indian problem.
Yes, or and at least his Indian problem.
Yeah, his Indian problem. He bought infected sheets
out of a smallpox hospital.
Sold it to the Indians, and then just waited for them to get the pox and die off.
Yes, which they had absolutely no immunity for. So
exactly.
That's we find out that Manny is the last of his tribe.
Right.
Because all the others died off.
Well, most of the men were infected by the pox. Once the men were infected by the pox, they rode in and killed everyone, mm-hmm. men, women, and children. Just slaughtered them, got rid of them. And Manny was who was left.
Yes. He's the only one who survived or got away. Yeah, also we'll go back to our mention there of when they move out of the castle into the brothel so that he can get better beds or something like that.
Yeah.
Our hero meets up with this rather interesting courtesan who happens to be Italian. She says, I'm just working my way through this area. And, of course, she's the most elegant and beautiful of all of them and, like... tends to sweep him off his feet.
Mm-hmm.
And he does pretty much the same thing to her, too.
Monica Bellucci?
So part of the... interesting, too, is the amount of eroticism they were put into this into the middle of this movie
mm-hmm.
with this.
Yeah, I mean, this is a brothel. There are women walking around half-nude. They didn't pull any punches with the brothel scenes. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, you know, teehee, they're, you know, half-dressed women walking around. No, there was nudity.
Sex.
Yeah.
All that going on.
They treated it honestly. And it wasn't that it was necessarily frowned upon or looked down upon. It was just very matter-of-fact that that's where they were.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, he goes and he's a patron of the establishment, but then he goes back to courting the other woman. I thought that was an interesting little thing. It was like, yeah, this is functional. I'm gonna go and use a prostitute, but I'm gonna go back and court the other woman.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was kind of an interesting play.
Yes.
So.
Yes, the nice little dissociance there. But, again, we're living in a much different time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. The thing we get about the Italian woman it's heavily implied, especially because she's Italian, because they mention the church and the church's interest
mm-hmm.
in all of this, that someone from the Vatican is there
mm-hmm.
spying or
keeping
tabs on what's going on. Somehow the Vatican knows, and somehow they are putting pressure on getting this problem resolved.
Mm-hmm.
The heavy implication, without, if I'm not mistaken, they never actually come out and say it,
mm-hmm.
is that she's the spy. And that's pretty heavily implied.
Well, that doesn't come out until much, much later.
But it's pretty obvious. I mean, they don't flat out say it, especially that early on, but she is the Italian woman.
The only one.
The only one. And she's kind of mysterious, mm-hmm. and nobody really knows about her. So it's,
and like I say, she's just a contract worker who happened to be there just working
this area. Yeah, and she just happens to conveniently show up at all the right times.
Her name's Sylvia.
Yes. Aside from that, plot-wise, it moves pretty quickly into the investigation of what's going on leads to...
it leads essentially into a dead end where he's constantly frustrated by trying to figure out what this is. He knows it's not a local creature, but everybody seems to want to, well, who cares? I mean, let's just get something and move on. And so finally they dismiss the local militia commander because he can't get the beast, and another specialist comes in who happens to be the master of arms for the king. Mm-hmm. So he brings his goon squad in, and they go out and have another hunt, and lo and behold, they kill the beast.
Right.
And they bring it back, and they give it to Francois, and they say, here, now make this look like the beast.
Right. One of the scenes early on was Francois had a fish mm-hmm. that had fur on it.
Right. He specializes in taxidermy, and one of his little examples is, you know, you can fake any result you want.
Right.
With clever use of the taxidermy.
Yeah, and so that's what they want him to do. One of the things that I thought was interesting is when they brought this other beast.
Well, they brought in a wolf.
Yeah, they brought in a wolf, and they said, this is the beast. They kind of paraded it around for everyone to see. Hey, we got the beast. Here it is. We've got it. Everybody's safe. Yay, we can all
go home now.
Now, just like Jaws, we got the shark. We got a shark. It's a big shark. Everybody can go back in the water.
But not only is it the big shark, we want you to make it even bigger.
Yeah.
Make it fit the definition that you came up with.
Tell everyone that this is the shark that's been attacking. I mean, there's another parallel there to Jaws and the story in that they just want the problem gone.
Yeah.
The local politicians just want it.
Well, this isn't the local. This is coming from the top. This is coming from the king himself, that they want this incident ended because they're tired of hearing about it.
Well, yeah. Well, the king's tired of hearing about it, but the local politicians are
barking too.
Yeah, they're pretty much at the mercy of, we have to get this resolved
now. So send in the top guy you got. And let's finish this.
And he pretty much dismisses...
everybody.
Everybody. He's like, look, this problem is solved. Go away. Mm-hmm. You are excused. Oh, and by the way, the king knows that you want to go to Africa.
We're making you a deal.
And in 6 months, there is a boat to Senegal. There's a spot on the boat for you.
If you play ball.
If you want it, you can go. We suggest that you go.
And we suggest you do the job and then disappear for a little while.
Right, right. So
we're going to make it worth your while.
So he continues to investigate.
Regardless, yes.
And Manny gets caught up. Here's probably a good place to say we're going to be spoilers from here on out. Mm-hmm. Granted, this is an almost 10-year-old movie,
right?
But
there's still some good parts to it.
Well, and it's a 10-year-old movie, but it's not a super popular movie. It's mm-hmm. not something that I hadn't seen it until just this past week. So spoilers.
Okay,
you're warned.
And Manny decide they're going to lay they're going to get down to the bottom of this thing by laying a series of traps,
right?
For this, and they're going to use themselves as bait.
Yes, yeah. So they go on their own hunt. They realize there's something more to this. It's them and the Marquis. They mm-hmm. get him involved, and they're going on the hunt. And this is one of the times when we really get to see the beast. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, we've only had little side glances
right,
over here.
If you ever had any doubt that it was something, I mean, up to this point, I was thinking, we've seen enough of this stuff in Shadows and stuff. Maybe it's still the gypsies, you know, just killing people. No. No, this was not the case. This was a beast of some kind.
And it is more powerful than they can imagine.
It's huge. It's armor. It's armor
plated.
Yeah, it's got some kind of real armor on it that leads you to believe there's something underneath it,
mm-hmm.
but it is a natural occurring animal that is that's got armor. And we also learn through their attack, through their fight with the beast, there's a really great action sequence with a series of traps trying to trap it, and this thing just blasting through all their traps. I mean, this thing is just a
force of nature,
ferocious. We come to find out that it's a trained animal,
right?
It is
not a wild creature. This is a trained animal, and it's under the control of a master.
Yes, and at that point, it's decided that, you know, we're no longer hunting the beast.
Right.
Hunting the beast is worthless.
Mm-hmm.
We
got
to
go for the
guy.
We
have
to
go for the guy who's in charge, is controlling this thing.
Find him, we'll find the beast.
Right. At this point, it's right about this time that Manny ends up getting captured. He ends up getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
Then we see.
Well, after Francois finds his body, which was very casually discarded,
mm-hmm.
and he picks him up and cleans him up for burial. But before he does, he's going to extract a huge revenge.
Yes.
And he knows where he's got to go because he's been keeping this map of where the attacks have occurred. And he finally pieces it all together. They're emanating from this one location. And he finds out this is a kind of an old abandoned mansion.
Mm-hmm.
And they call it, he asks him, you know, what it is. He says, well, it's a private hunting preserve.
Right.
But there's an old abandoned mansion on it. So using his Indian skills, he sneaks back in there and breaks in. Literally breaks in.
Breaks
like,
in.
Yeah, like a freight train.
And so this is the sequence we were talking about where he just comes in and just kicks ass.
Yes, he just tears,
he
rips,
just
and snorts.
He just rips through and slaughters everyone in his path. The interesting thing, and one of the things that it was kind of an interesting message that I took from the action sequences is that when Manny fought, he was very controlled.
Right. He was very restrained.
He was very restrained. He didn't kill. He would wound, but he didn't really kill any of the people,
mm-hmm.
unless it was I don't think he did at all.
Well, he did in that fight sequence in the catacombs.
Okay.
When he knew he was surrounded, he was going to be trapped. He knew he was going to have to just literally chop his way out.
But even then, he didn't do a lot of killing. When this action sequence takes place, there is no holding back.
Yeah, Francois just rips and snorts.
He just rips through them. It is fast and it is brutal.
Right. We have no slow-mo on this thing, too.
No. No, it is just really quick. He goes through. He cleans house.
Literally.
He takes him out.
Mm-hmm.
Then he comes back. And
well, he has to pull his punch at the end because he has to finish the cremation of Manny's body before sunrise. So he's investigating,
right.
he's found where the beast's lair is. He knows where it is. It's right there in front of him in the cage.
Mm-hmm.
But he can't do anything about it just yet. He has to, we've later find out he had to come back and finish the cremation of Manny's body. And after that is all done, he gets himself arrested by the local
Pugglies. You killed a bunch of people over there. We don't like that. Plus, you were told to go away. So now we're going to make you go away.
Yes, he finds his ass thrown in prison.
He's thrown in prison, and
Sylvia.
Yeah, I was going to say Sylvia comes to
visit
him.
He originally thinks it's his love interest.
Right.
And he actually calls out her name, thinking she would be there, and he's kind of surprised to find out it's Sylvia. And Sylvia starts laying on him the whole story,
mm-hmm.
that she was actually she knows what has been going on, and now he has more or less pinpointed what she has been trying to find.
Right.
But she's trying to not only find the person controlling the beast, we find out this is not just one person. This is a conspiracy of people. And this is where we kind of find out. He asks her, "Well, who sent you?" Well, I said, "How do you know this?" And she replies, "The people who sent me told me."
Yeah.
And then we find out, okay, at this point, she is not just your local prostitute. She is she's a spy.
She's an agent.
She's a troubleshooter.
Yeah.
She's one of their top Vatican troubleshooters.
Right. And
she poisons him.
Yeah.
At this point,
she poisons him. Then the next thing we see is his girlfriend coming to the to that local. Well, it's not the local guy; it's the guy who came in to clean up the problem.
Right. She comes to the master of arms.
Right. She comes to him and says, "You know, where is he? I want him back." He's like, "Yeah, he's dead."
Yeah.
She's like, "You're lying. I know this is not true.
And
you're lying. You're just telling me something to get rid of me." And he shows her the body. He's dead.
He's dead. Yeah,
he's buried.
Well, they didn't bury him. He was laying on the table, all foamy at the mouth and everything.
They did that, but then the next thing you see is a burial. And so the two protagonists that had been the protagonists through the whole film to this point, at this point we're about 2 hours into a 2.5 hour long movie. Both of them are dead.
Whoa. This is how are they going to pull this rabbit out of the hat?
This is kind of cool because at this point, Marquis is still alive, but seriously injured because he got
tangled with the beast.
The beast grabbed him by the arm and drug him around for a few minutes.
Threw him around like a rag doll.
So he's hurt. He's not up to full par. He's taken some hits.
Yes, and also we now see come back in the creepy brother reveals himself. And that has got to be one of the really most ick factor parts of the movie.
Yeah, because
he
reveals himself that he's not himself.
Well, he's never been himself.
Yeah,
but he prevents her from being poisoned because the conspirators want to get rid of her too.
Right,
but we find out his intentions are not all that altruistic. The only reason he doesn't want her to die is because he wants her for himself.
Yes.
And we find out, oh, my arm was not bitten off by a lion. I've just been concealing it because it has been badly mauled.
Right.
But his arm is fully, fully functional.
Yes.
If a little grotesque. And she's now been kind of shocked. It had so many shocks in one day. Her lover has been killed. Her brother is coming on to her. Oh, and by the way, I'm not as seriously injured as I've been letting on for the last few years.
Right.
And he essentially rapes her in her own bedroom there.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I say it's got to be one of the creepiest parts of the whole movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this is where Sylvia now comes back to the grave, digs up Francois, who we find out is not dead. He was just merely just poisoned enough. He got better.
Yeah.
And he's not dead. He just got
better. He comes back. He comes back and kicks Sirius' ass.
Well, yeah. Again. Then he's now, okay, everybody thinks I'm dead, so now I can really... I'm going to finish the job at this point.
Right. Right.
And he's got extra help.
He's got extra help, and he's got surprise and superstition on his side, because he can basically show up, and everybody knows him and knows that he's supposed to be dead. So when this guy shows up, they panic.
Well, he comes in at the meeting of what we find out is the Brotherhood of the Wolf. These were the local aristocracy that were essentially using the beast to create this political incident to undermine the king, so they could essentially take over.
That was such a great scene when he's like up on that dais and he's like, "And now I'm going to call each of you out." And he points to him, and they're all in masks.
Yes.
And he points to each of them and says,
"By name,
you." And he goes through like six or seven of them and just names them by full name.
Mm-hmm.
"You and you and you. I know you, and I am here.
And I'm not alone this time." Yeah. He brings the entire militia back that they originally dismissed, and they're not too. They're kind of really happy to get their little comeuppance too.
Right.
And again, he jumps in, and we have another great little fight scene going on there. This time with the brother, who has this really wicked whip sword that straight out of an anime series of he's been watching. This guy apparently is. I've been watching Bleach a lot. Because he's got this whip sword, which is made up of individual segments and can not only cut and but can also wrap around.
Yeah, it's a really good fight sequence. After a nice little fight, it ends. The good guy wins, and we get kind of the story of the beast.
Mm-hmm.
What was it?
Yeah.
What is the beast? Interestingly enough, the thing that they alluded to lions early on,
he mentioned brother mentioned that he was attacked by a lion, how he lost his arm.
Well, and so at the brothel, the prostitute was asking him about his scars.
Oh yes,
and he had the scar on his chest, and he's like,
arrow. This is a bear,
and this was a lion. Mm-hmm. He said that. This really bad one. This was a lion, so it was this was coming full circle to that this great conflict that he had, the one that got away,
mm-hmm.
was a lion attack, and it comes back around that beast was a lion,
right? It was one that he had raised from a cub and trained to essentially be a killing machine.
Yeah, he came back with a lion and it had cubs. And he only kept one, and it was the strongest. They said that this was the strongest cub, and he raised it and trained it, and that was the beast.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, in looking at the history of this, since this was a historic event, at first people thought it was a wolf, which kind of lends to the Brotherhood of the Wolf storyline. The lion piece of it was fictional,
mm-hmm.
because nobody really knew what the beast was. They think now that the beast was, I think it was an African hyena.
Mm.
They think it was some type of hyena, just based on the historic accounts.
That got out of somebody's menagerie or private zoo.
Yeah, they believe that it was quite possibly a hyena of some type that was the beast.
Mm-hmm. Which would make sense, given that hyenas are pretty vicious and aggressive.
Right.
And in that kind of environment, they would be basically free reign.
Yeah, it wasn't like they had a whole lot of organization to go after this thing. And considering the area over which it attacked, that thing could have hidden out there for a couple of years and mm-hmm. just attacked at random. And that's pretty much what it did.
And yeah, the locals are thinking in terms of wolves and bears. They're never thinking of something like that.
Right, and nothing foreign.
Mm-hmm.
So. That's the movie in a nutshell. I enjoyed it. It was an interesting mix of genres, and sometimes movies like this that have a lot of different things going for them don't work really well. I thought this one worked.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the martial arts and the political intrigue and
the horror, the
religious intrigue, and
the historical background.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
we don't think of France as being a particularly spooky place.
No. And it was funny because I didn't even realize that this was, based on historic events until well after the fact. It's like I said, the movie does not wear based on a true story. Very very simply, that the movie poster, if this was a U.S. made film, the movie poster would have said based on actual events. The at the beginning of the movie there would have been probably a nice scrolling text explaining the history of it
and, in a background,
and giving you a
right,
little bit of context.
Right, this movie lets all the explanation kind of just flow with the story rather than trying to set it all up at the beginning.
Exactly, yeah.
And I guess the French,
and I like that. I liked that it gave you I mean, it gave you the attack of the mm-hmm. woman in the wild to get you sucked in, mm-hmm. but then kind of took a step back and let you discover what the story really was.
That's an interesting take from the style of French movie making and American movie making. European films, kind of in general, tend to assume that the audience is a lot more intelligent and can figure this stuff out through the story flow.
Yeah.
Whereas American type directors and script writers, they all have to feel everything has to be kind of explained.
Right, right. Yeah, and you know, the more I think about it, there are a number of parallels between this and Jaws.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the biggest of them being the unknown nature of the beast.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting things about it, there weren't as many direct character comparisons, but there was conceptually the same kind of things going on. Mm-hmm. You had the politicians really pushing to suppress or end
the problem,
the problem, or end people talking about the problem mm-hmm. to continue on with their lives. Where in Jaws, it was about end the problem.
Economics,
well,
yeah,
it was economics. It was end the problem so we can get back to the business
as usual
of being a tourist town.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, it was we need to end this problem because
it's been scaring people to death.
It's been going on for 2 years. We've had hundreds of people die.
It's undermining our authority,
and it is undermining the authority of the king,
mm-hmm.
which means that if the king starts putting pressure on us locally, we're going to have real problems because we rely on the king
He might decide that you don't know how to administer your own district and do a little reshuffling of titles.
Which does happen.
Mm-hmm.
It does happen about halfway through the film. The influence of the king comes in and says, look, we gave you these resources to solve the problem. You haven't yet.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to take care of the situation.
Mm-hmm. You're going to step back and just let the pros take care of it.
Right,
now.
Right. So yeah, I'm going to say thank you to Lula for recommending Brotherhood of the Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
Solid movie.
Definitely go out and rent this. It's worth your 2.5 hours.
Yeah, I would say just based on the little bit of it I saw. Seek out the extended edition.
Yeah, and watch it in French. The original language.
Yeah, I didn't have the luxury of watching it in French just because of timing. Mm-hmm. I just didn't have the time to sit down and read the movie. You know, I had to watch it with the dubs. I just didn't have the time to consume it that way. But watching it in French, I think you'll get even more out of it. Definitely watch the extended edition rather than the theatrical, because I do believe it was probably cut better. I mean, just from what I saw, mm-hmm. Some of the sequences were cut better. From what someone told me, there was like 20 minutes of footage added to the movie, but the movie's only 5 minutes longer.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that
They dropped scenes
or they cut the length of some scenes, which I did notice even in the first half hour. There was a few scenes that I remember lasting fully twice as long as they lasted in the cut that I saw, mm-hmm. which just made for a much smoother flow, especially the beginning, which the beginning kind of drug a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, it just starts out a little slowly. Again, that just may be a hallmark of this type of style of filmmaking.
Or it could be just a bad cut.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and also to add the ambience, also watch it on a dark and stormy night.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot
of raining in this movie. It seems like this part of France must rain about 99% of the time.
Yeah, it's a just generally dark
movie. Oh, but I did notice there was one interesting feature. If you notice when the characters are talking to each other, you see their breath.
Yeah.
So they did set it in the time. They were authentic to the point that, yes, they did not have central heating, and it was in a cold and damp location.
Yes.
And it's cold and damp all the time, so you always see their breath when they're talking to each other.
Also, for being suspenseful mm-hmm. and for having the elements of horror that it had, there wasn't a tremendous amount of gore.
Mm-hmm.
There were creepy things to be seen. Because
right.
you would see you know, mauled bodies, but they tended to be from a different distance. They didn't.
Yeah, they enough got a, to know what you, it let your imagination run wild.
Yeah, you saw a blackened corpse, you know, or the one scene where they were actually in the snow and the snow was falling on the corpse and it was
all frozen.
It was all frozen. But it, you know, if you look closely during Star Wars, you could see Owen and Beru's burnt bodies there. There's not a whole lot of difference in what we saw in this movie and what we saw in something
it's
like that.
It's enough there to light your imagination, but not enough to be gratuitous.
Right, right. So
it's not a splatter film.
No, it's not a splatter film. And I would venture to say it might even be one of those, you know, date movies where, you know, you snuggle up close and you get the little chill.
The creepies, yes.
You know, you have that factor, you have the romance, there's a little bit of the eroticism, and there's the action piece. So really,
it's a good blend.
It is a nice blend. It's really nice.
So I think we pretty much covered this one. Oh, by the way, mentioned that this movie picked up a whole bunch of awards. Picked up the Saturn Award, which is given out to science fiction horror films. For in 2002, and it won another award in 2002 also for best picture for best music, believe it or not, and for costume. Let's see, it was nominated award. It was the César Award for 2002 costume design, Stiges Film Festival Grand Prize of European Fantasy Film. And the Charterburg Romantic Film Festival Best New Actress for Amelie, if I get her name right, DeQuinney.
Was that the girlfriend?
Yes.
Okay.
And it also it won an award by the Video Dealers Association in 2003, and Best Foreign Language Film of the Year.
I did read another bit of trivia that this is the second highest grossing French film
ever. Yes,
in the U.S. In the U.S.
Right. And foreign films generally don't do huge box office here, but this one did very well.
Considering, because theatrically it made like between 10 and 11 million.
Well,
but the rights were picked up for only two, so it was financially successful for the distributors in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, from my understanding, it did considerably better in DVD.
Yes, it did. After
in DVD sales,
well,
and rentals after the theatrical release.
Well, yeah, that wouldn't be terribly unsurprising because foreign language pictures, you know, yes, in the U.S. generally only get in the art houses,
right?
But now, that was some years ago. Now you see a little. I'll say our local AMC has been much better about putting on some more foreign language films.
Right.
So they are getting better distribution, at least the better foreign language films.
Yes. So, yeah, I think you and I are in consensus that definitely check it out.
Well worth your 2.5 hours.
Absolutely, absolutely. It is available via Netflix, and I found it through my local library.
Right. So. You shouldn't have too hard a time finding this movie.
Yeah. You won't find it streaming. I can tell you that.
Yeah, I can't understand why they don't.
I know. I almost thought this would be kind of a natural.
It's been a fairly long enough time that.
And from what I understand, at one point it was streaming on Netflix, so it could be just a matter of
buying the rights again.
Yeah, getting the rights again to display. Maybe it was limited time rights. So, all right, let's go ahead and call it.
All right. Well, thank you for coming and sticking with us, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week, and this one will be released on Wednesday. The next one will be released on Monday. After that, there will be no more Wednesday releases. We were caught up.
Yep, we're caught up, and we're going to go back to our normal schedule.
Once a week. All right, see ya.
Thank you.